club, Hetai Rea Hellenis. I had went. What's Hebrew club again, Tim?
Moedon Ivri.
Moedon Ivri. That's
Ivri.
Right. Ivri. Sorry about that. Okay, we are reading the Sermon on the Mount in the Gospel according to St. Matthew. And we are in chapter 5 at the salt and light sayings. And we started last week to take up verse 13. And then I realized it would be folly because it would take too long to kind of address things. So we'll pick up at verse Matthew chapter 5, verse 13. And there's some interesting and somewhat elliptical grammar here. We'll try to explain it. So, reading it first, verse 13. Humes este tahalas tes geis. Eande tahalas moran the entine halas desetai. Eis uden iskue eti eme bleten exo kata patestai hippaton anthropon. So, first, emphatic, you, second person plural pronoun, you, y'all, all y'all in Texan, are the salt of the earth. Now, since we have the verb halidzo coming up, and which means to salt something, believe it or not, halas in this context is a verbal noun. So, earth there is probably objective genitive. You salt the earth. And we'll see a similar thing, you light the world, right? So, objective genitive. And now we have a what you call a present general conditional sentence, aeon plus the subjunctive, followed by a present indicative. And if the salt moron the, now this is from morino, which means to make something foolish, believe it or not. I actually looked around. This is the only verse given in Liddell and Scott for a kind of a modified meaning. It normally means to make foolish or to be made foolish, or in the passive voice can also have an intransitive meaning, to become foolish. Okay? So here it's usually rendered has become insipid, or, since salt is the subject, to lose its taste. Believe it or not, that's how you get from A to B on morino. Okay? And it's an aorist subjunctive passive third person singular. It's a liquid stem, and so the it goes from morino to emorana is the third principal part. So if the salt has, we'll follow the lead there, has become insipid or lost its taste. Now here's the real interesting thing to me. Entine halasthesitai. What is, I think in all the English translations actually, is done with halasthesitai. This is from halidzo, it means to salt something. In the passive means to be salted, right? But what is often done here as well is to take the passive force away and to have it mean to become salty. If that's what the verb means, it means by what means, entine, by means of what, will the salt become salty? And I think that's the way all the English translations do it. I sort of tentatively suggest that that's probably not right. You can look at, there's a note in the Matthew commentary on this verse. I think that maybe halasthesitai retains its true passive force, and the it is the earth. If the salt has become insipid, how will the earth, by what means will the earth be salted? So I think you can retain the true passive voice of the verb, and by means of what, because that's the real oomph, is that the earth needs the positive effect of salt, whatever exactly that means. And no, we can't tarry over that. There's about 11 different options for, is salt flavor, is it preservative, blah, blah, blah. And maybe the answer is all or at least most of the above. So that's the way I think I want to take that. By what means will it, that is the earth, be salted? It, now the earth still, excuse me now, it, the salt, is good, is able, is competent, unto nothing still, except, eme, now you repeat the iskue, it is able, it is competent. Blathen is the aorist participle passive of balo. Okay. After it has been thrown out, exo, it is good, kata patestai, to be trampled by people. So the infinitive here, iskuo, is one of these verbs that likes to take an infinitive, like dunamai. It is able, it is competent to do something. Here it is good for nothing, except it is good to be trampled after it has been cast out. So there's actually some very interesting, just some translational possibilities here. And it is a little tight and elliptical, but again, on this entina holostasitai, obviously the major English translations could easily be right. But there are a few commentators, and I've joined them, who want to retain this true passive force to holostasitai. So there's a lot in there, and it's crammed really tight. Questions about any of that? Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, I do. The two verbs, morino and ischeto, are
right.
Usually used with animate subjects, as far as I know.
Uh-huh.
Now, my first question is, are there any other examples where morino occurs with kind of inanimate, like a product, like salt, which would help us with kind of the meaning? And number two, if not, is he kind of playing with both the kind of vehicle and tenor of the metaphor, so that mm-hmm. when you think of salt, you don't think of becoming foolish,
right.
But you think of people. So there's always that kind of tension
right.
back and forth.
Right, right. I did look around I just used Bible Works, in the Septuagint and the Greek New Testament, there's no other examples. It's not that, morino is not that common. Maybe 10 times or something like that. And also Liddell and Scott only list, the Gospel of Matthew and the parallel in Luke for, like you said, an inanimate object. Usually it means for a person to become foolish. Yeah. And we just read this, some of you guys are in my Greek reading slides, we just read this in 1 Corinthians, chapter 8, right? So God made foolish the wisdom of the world, or however exactly that. That's morino there. So I actually thought about that too. If his saying here is sort of just leaving sort of the tenor and the vehicle half exposed each. So you're salt, but you're stupid salt. Wait a minute, what do you mean stupid salt? I mean something like that. It is an interesting saying, and maybe we can't be absolutely certain about some of these things, but. I still remember when I went to write the grammatical note on this, it took me like a day to figure out, A, what I thought, and B, how I would say it. And I'll have to let other people decide, even if what I said was coherent. But, yeah, that's a very good question, Tim. Other good questions, good or not? Yeah, all right, good. Okay, let's move on then. Now the other metaphor of light, it comes out, and here the grammar at least is not so bad. Verse 14, humes este ta phos tu kosmu, u dinatai polis, kribenai epano arus kemene. And then maybe we'll get verse 15, because the metaphor continues there. Ude kaiusen liknan, kai tetheasenautan hippatan marian. Al epitein lichnion, kai lampe pasentois ente oikia. So again, you emphatic are the world's light, or the light of the world. Again, probably here objective genitive. You photizo the world. Right? The world's a dark place, it needs light, you're it. Tag, you're it. Right? Well, that's kind of it. I mean, Jesus just tagged the fisherman, right? Tag, you're it. Franzman says he confiscates people for God. I kind of like that. So you don't volunteer. The Holy Ghost has enabled me to decide to follow Jesus. Okay. So you are the light of the world. You light the world. A city is not able, kribenai, to be hidden. This is from Crypto. It's a strong sixth principal part. It's ekriben. So this is the aorist infinitive passive. On a hill, lying. Now we have to decide. Kemene is the deponent participle, a present participle deponent of kemai. So we have to decide, its reference is polis, city, feminine singular, nominative. Is it attributive or predicate? You can kind of take it either way. Is it a city which is lying on a hill? Is it a city because it's lying on a hill? If it's a lot of things would make sense. And so maybe you don't decide, you know, strictly which way to take the participle. But the sense is clear enough, I think. So a city is not able to be hid. We'll take it conditionally, if it is lying on a hill. It's a little obvious, right? Sometimes the Lord uses what I call the divine duh. He just kind of gently leads you along and with this obvious logic, and then you can't refute him, which is always a bad idea to try to refute the Son of God. See Matthew 21 and 22 for a bunch of people who tried. Udea, neither do they light, here's the impersonal, third person plural from Kaio, neither do they light a lamp, probably one of these little oil jobbies that's got it's got one candle power, because it's you know, that's what it is. Nor do they light a lamp, and they put it, tetheos, and just reminds us all that we don't really know the forms of tithemi, we just guess. And this is just the present indicative active third plural. Nor do they put it under a two bushel basket, or however big a mudian is. So shall we all sing now? Hide it under a bushel.
No.
One of our kids in the little thought it was hide it under a bush. Oh no.
Oh yeah. My kids.
Okay. Rather, upon a lichnion.
Sure.
They put it upon a lampstand, right? And it lamps or it gives light. Maybe a dative of advantage. Could be to all, but maybe for all the in the house people. And one commentator I remember suggesting that, you know, you've got your typical Galilean peasant home, which is probably one room. And so a simple lamp actually would give light to everybody, you know, who is in that particular oikia. So again, you can't refute Jesus' argument. Nobody does this. So how absurd it would be if the disciples spiritually did that. And so now comes the exhortation in verse 16. But first, any questions about 15, grammar or anything?
Oh, I got a question.
Go ahead, Will.
Just getting back to verse 13, halas, the salt. What's
yep.
the genitive of that?
To neuter.
Oh, that's a neuter noun?
Yeah. Ta halas. Mm-hmm.
And then what's the genitive of that?
Oh man. Would it be halus? Tim, help me out here. You're the Septuagint guy.
Probably halus.
Halus? If it's third declension? Like, but it's not ethnos, ethnus. That's a good question. I don't actually know.
Okay.
Halos? Yeah, it could be haleos after the pistis pattern. So, why don't you work up a two-page report of that?
Yeah.
Get back to me on that. Yeah, good. If you. Okay. All right, the glories of Greek. All right? Good. Okay, verse 16 then. Hutos lampsato tafos himon em prosthenton anthropon hapos idosin himon ta kala erga kai doxasosin tan patera himon tan entois uranois. So now we have a third person imperative from lampo. Lampsato is the aorist imperative active third singular. The toe ending is a can be at least a dead giveaway. So, and here we have the problem of English translation. It's typically done with let. Let the light, which is the subject of the imperative, the light of you shine. The problem in English is that it sounds like you're saying allow something to happen. So Wallace's grammar, actually in this discussion of third person imperatives, you know, he suggests putting in brackets, I command that your light shine. See, just to make sure that you know that it's grammatically an imperative, and in this case it's an exhortation from the Son of God to his disciples, and obviously to us. So I command that, let your light shine like this, hutos, in the presence of people. Hapos plus the subjunctive, you know, most of the time probably expresses purpose, and that works well here. In order that they, that is the people, may see, the aorist subjunctive of horao, the third principal part you may remember, is adon. And then when you leave the indicative mood, the stem goes to id. So, for instance, idu and ide, those are aorist imperative forms. And this is aorist subjunctive active third plural. In order that they may see of you the noble works, your noble works, your beautiful works. And now a second subjunctive verb in the hupos clause. They may glorify the Father of you. Which one? The in the heavens one. Which is one of Matthew's typical ways for saying Heavenly Father. Ha pater, ha en tois uranois. Most of the time plural, although occasionally singular. And no, I don't know why. We need some Old Testament specialist to explain that. Oh, Dr. Seleska, there you are.
Mark.
Yeah, right. So, good. So that's verse 16. Very familiar. But yeah. Any questions? So an exhortation with a purpose clause. Will.
How about the ha post? That's a purpose?
Probably.
Okay. Now, would you ever, I'm not saying here, but ever take it like maybe it means there's two verbs that are governed by this purpose?
Yes.
So would you ever take it like one governed by purpose and the other one governed by result? Could you ever do that?
That's a very good question. I can't think of any examples right now, but there are some like that. One of the things that might happen there is that the second verb would be a future indicative and not just another subjunctive. Okay. However, another thing, you know, kai just by itself can have the sense of and so if the context leads you in that direction. And by the way, this is where I reveal my supreme geek nature. If you look at Blosterbrenner Funk paragraph 442, it gives you, believe it or not, all the things that kai can express. And one of the things is it can be, as the grammars call it, consecutive. That is to say, result. So I would say in this context, in order that they may see your good works and so, and as a result, yeah. So that seems to nestle in fairly well with the context. And grammatically, there'd be nothing to prohibit it. So... yeah, but sometimes you will also, you'll see a purpose construction will, and then you'll see kind of trailing along behind a future indicative verb, and that, you know, I know I've seen that in the New Testament, but I can't.
Future indicative expresses result.
The result, the sort of the further consequence.
It's kind of a chain of events.
Exactly. Okay. It's a kind of a chain of events thing.
Did the future and the subjunctive ever kind of bleed?
Yes, sometimes. For instance, we all learned that emphatic negation is ou me plus aorist subjunctive. Occasionally, you'll see ou me plus a future indicative. So you get subjunctives and future indicatives kind of.
Because sometimes it'll be in a clause, but it'll have a future.
Occasionally, right.
Like John, Revelation.
Yep. And interestingly, some of those times you'll see variant readings, where maybe a scribe has corrected to the more grammatically proper form, right? Yep. Yeah, and it, you know, so at the time, of course, it's a living language, and it has rules which it's then happy to break, you know, at times. So, right.
Which, when you think about it, the subjunctive being a possible sense.
Mm-hmm, right.
In the future is
in the future.
They kind of bleed together.
They're clearly first cousins. Right. Yep. You do see these things. Absolutely. Good. Very good questions. Good observations. Other things. Remember that BDF 442. It's a great reading, especially when you're struggling with insomnia. Okay. All right. Now we turn, in a sense, into the body of the sermon. At least I would kind of see it that way. Explicating what it means to be salt and light. And I'm very happy we're not going to do theology, because 17 to 20 is the most theologically challenging paragraph in the gospel. Not that you can't figure out what the right reason or the right interpretation might be, you're just not sure which one. So grammatically, it's not too bad, and that's where we're focusing. Verse 17. Me nomiset hati eothen katalisai tan naman e tus prophetas. Uk eothen katalisai Allah plerosai. So we have the typical way to express prohibition, me plus the aorist subjunctive, of nomizo, to reckon or to think. fact, we have one of these forms in 1 Clement, you guys, that we're going to read today in Greek readings. So do not reckon, do not think that I came, and again in context, here's the purpose. I came in order to, or just to, tear down, or perhaps nullify the law or the prophets, the Old Testament, right? Ukeelthon, I did not come for that purpose, but for this purpose. I came not to, abolish or nullify, but to fulfill. And here I think, you know, the meaning of kataluo is a little flexible, but it seems to be the opposite. The antonym is plerao, right? And since plerao in Matthew means something, almost always something like to enact the scriptural plan, right? So this happened in order to fulfill what was spoken. So Jesus says, I'm not just bringing that stuff to an end, I'm actually enacting it. See? So don't think that I came, don't think that my relationship to the Torah and the prophets is anything other than a positive, fulfilling, fulfillment role. Huge, huge concept in Matthew. And again, that's theology, but happily the grammar at least is pretty straightforward. A couple of purpose infinitives. Any questions on that?
Well, you wonder out of why he even said, I haven't come to abolish the law, because in Jewish thinking, you would assume that any Messiah would be there to actually fulfill it. So right. There must have been right. Something in the background that would cause him to right. Make that assertion.
Right.
So again, we're getting out of grammar.
No, it's okay. The one guess I have is, and this shows up at the very end of the sermon, is the absolutely stunning authority with which Jesus teaches. I mean, he just makes stuff up. You know, he footnotes nothing. He just says it. See? And so you're right, Tim, something has come up that Jesus feels need to bring this up and now explain the relationship between his ministry and teaching and that of the Torah, right? So what it is, we can't be sure, but I think it's a very good question. So. But yeah, see, none of us is allowed to make up anything, right?
Yeah, right.
See, Jesus just makes stuff up. My son-in-law has a shirt, actually, it says, I make stuff up. So, yeah, Dustin.
I was going to ask on the Pleirosai. Just as far as the definition, I know we a lot of times take it fulfill mm-hmm. or complete, but in more of a complete sense, could it be just more like an idea of I'm filling in the gaps in the law and the prophets? I'm completing kind of the story of the Torah mm-hmm. and of the prophetic writings, or do you think it doesn't really speak to that?
Well, I mean, you kind of said two related things there. I'm not sure filling in the gaps, but the second thing you said, Dustin, I think is probably spot on. It's okay. It's an unfinished story,
right.
And now I'm bringing it to it. It's not quite teleo; it's a different stem.
Sure.
But it does mean the verb can just mean to fill something.
Yeah.
Well, that implies that it's not full; it's right. Empty. So you're just bringing it up to the level where it needs to be.
Okay.
Yep. Right. Sure. Right. Yeah. No, that's a very good question. So. Okay, maybe we'll get one more verse and then we'll stop verse 18. We have to get our Hebrew vocab up. Amen. Gar lego humin. Heos an par elthe ha uranos kai hege. Iota hen e mia keraya u me par elthe apa tu namu. Heos an panta genetai. Again, difficult to interpret, but not too bad to translate. For, indeed, truly, I am saying to you all, plural, heos on, until clauses can take a variety of forms, you can have just heos, and then you can have an indicative. When you have heos on, you'll get a subjunctive, just because on is there. So until the heaven and the earth pass away from par erchomai, one iota, which is not a reference to a Star Wars character, or one hook. Now, a keraya is I think it's a part of a Hebrew letter.
Yeah, probably that hay that kind of juts out over.
I think so. Ume plus air will certainly not pass away from the law. Notice that he doesn't say law and prophets, although I think the insertion fixes that. Yeah, it does, actually. And now we have another until clause. Until all things happen. And there you have genetai would be a singular verb, the tai ending, because panta is a neuter plural. And as you may remember, neuter plural subjects very often go with singular verbs. Now this will be your trivia for the day, and then we have to stop. This is the only only sentence in the New Testament that has two until clauses in it. So aren't you happy about that? So, is this going to give you a raise or something? Or pay for your books next term? No, not at all. But now you know. So, okay. And that's it. We'll stop there at 18, right? And then we'll pick up at verse 19. Now, does Hebrew Club meet during the break, Tim? Or
not during the break.
Okay. So this is the last week of the term, so Greek Club will also take a hiatus, which is Greek for pause, I guess. I don't know. Sounds like Latin. And we'll meet again, same bat time, same bat channel in a couple of weeks. So, good. Very good.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.